Hello and welcome to Her Ambitious Career, the success podcast for corporate women who want more from their lives and careers. Each week, we share career and leadership strategies to help you set stretching goals, own your value, build visibility and credibility, gain recognition, get paid, and confidently take your career to that next level. Whatever your ambition, let's do this thing. Now, here's your host and career success expert, Rebecca Allen.
Ladies, welcome on in. Today, I am joined by the fabulous Ro Karenius. Hi, Ro, how are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
I'm delighted to be here. I'm delighted it's not so hot at the moment. It's been really hot in Sydney. So I'm really, really grateful that it's come down a little bit. But Ro, I'm so glad that you're on the show. Ro is the head of responsible sourcing at Lendlease, which is an ASX listed company here in Australia. And I am really, really interested to have Ro on the show because we're going to be talking about human rights and human rights in a corporate setting. So it's super different from anything else that we've covered on the show so far. And I'm really looking forward to getting stuck in. So thank you, Ro, for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So the reason that Ro and I were talking about this topic and bringing this topic to you is last December, it was the 75th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights and its implications for us all, you know, worldwide. And I'd love, Ro, if you could just give us a bit of a background, if you like, as to why that declaration was set up in the first place.
Well, Rebecca, I think, you know, it's funny, in this day and age where we are today, it's somewhat ironic that 75 years on, we are still experiencing significant challenges with human rights in the world today. And for the UN Declaration, that was developed by Franklin Roosevelt's wife after World War II. And of course, this was drafted as a set of international principles aimed at protecting people. Human rights are essentially principles that inherit to all human beings, regardless of race, sex, nationality, ethnicity, language, religion, or any other status. So when you see things like the right to life, the right to be free from slavery, the right to an adequate standard of living, the right to a clean and healthy environment, which was a new one, the latest one that was a resolution in 2022, the right to education, these are all dimensions of human rights. And of course, we are seeing right around the world today a number of challenges in human rights violations through geopolitical conflict, technological change, environmental degradation. And the corporate context is part of a three-pillar idea where you have, and it's known as the Ruggie Framework, which was a framework developed by the late Professor John Ruggie. But it essentially talks about the responsibility for governments to, it's not a responsibility, it's actually a duty to protect human rights. It's a duty for corporates to respect human rights and for rights holders affected by a negative impact that they should have a right to remedy.
But can you explain a little bit, Ro, about that difference between those two duties, if you like? So you're mentioning that the government's duty is to protect human rights and that companies, organizations have a requirement to essentially respect those human rights. What does it really mean to respect human rights from a corporate perspective?
First thing we've got to remember is that when we talk about the duty to protect and to respect, these human rights are in effect soft laws. And in Australia, for example, a lot of those human rights are enshrined in legislation. The Anti-Discrimination Act has a number of those principles in there, for example. So when we're talking about, in this context, what we mean is making commitments in the corporate context. It's about how businesses behave, how they conduct and make decisions that may have an impact on people. It could be a positive impact, but of course it can also be a negative impact. And when you're having a negative impact on people and communities, you must take steps to remedy that. You must understand, first of all, what those negative impacts are. You must take measures to mitigate and prevent those impacts. But if you don't prevent and there is harm caused, then you have, you know, you must remedy those consequences of people who are what they call rights holders in human rights sort of legal language. But they are people who are adversely impacted by the conduct of an organisation. So it's a little bit different from a kind of transactional, typical sort of legal liability perspective, if you like. It brings into the landscape this concept of a more moralistic, if you like, approach to doing the right thing and to doing no harm. And so in some respects, that is an area that speaks to an organisation's culture. How does that business operate? What sort of values that organisation operates by? And, you know, you would want those human rights values, a lot of them are mandated by legislation anyway, to be part of the operating culture of a business.
So how does that work in practical terms? Is this sort of duty, if you like, followed out by, say, HR? Or is this something that comes from the top down? Is this something that is mandated from C-level, which is, you know, this is how we behave as an organization? It's sort of, like you say, interspersed with companies' values and its behaviors and how it operates. But how typically would these measures be communicated within or through or down an organization?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to note is that it needs to be embedded in the company's operating culture. So that's, you know, about tone from the top. It's about how decisions are made, what processes are in place to make those decisions. How formal are those structures as well? Do people know what is expected of them? Is there a code of conduct, as it were? Are you able to raise concerns in a way that is non-retaliatory, that safeguards confidentiality, that you can trust? These are structures and measures that an organisation will have. But at the top of that is, you know, if I put it at the top, it is about company culture. And then you can have policies and procedures, but those policies, the policies essentially are about setting out and announcing almost what your commitments are, what you stand for. The crux, of course, to that is how well embedded those policies and procedures are. How does that work in practice? How do we see behaviours of people? Are they consistent with those policies? Are they consistent with the organisation's values? And so where you have a policy that's public, it's saying to the world, this is what we stand for, that's all well and good. But the critical thing about organisations that demonstrate a respect for human rights is that you can see those commitments practically embedded in the company's behaviour and conduct.
Yes. Would you say that, you know, where we are now, it's 2024 right now, would you say that we need this now in 2024 more than ever?
Well, we do because, and we're seeing that regulatory-wise because there's been failures. The world is a lot more complex, and what we're seeing is that organisations are now starting to be regulated. Certainly in Europe, we're seeing this emergence of businesses having to disclose and be accountable for their how they manage and mitigate their environmental and social impacts. And one of the ways where you can see all of that is through the public disclosures they make. But we're also equally seeing investor pressure, investors who are looking at the performance of businesses with the ESG lens now, more so than before. Well, that's ESG, which is environmental, social and governance. They are looking at environmental, social and governance risks and tying that to organisation performance. And they want information about how those risks are managed. This is a much bigger evolution than just looking purely at financial performance historically or financial risk. Yeah. And so what that brings into play, particularly if you have that broader context of climate risk and geopolitical tensions and a fracturing and a challenging and a decline in trust of institutions and authorities, what you're now starting to see is this need for greater transparency, to give greater confidence to market, to communities, to stakeholders about how, and to shareholders, of course, so around how businesses are not only behaving, but operating to manage those social and environmental risks in particular. And so, for example, in the EU, we had the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive passed, which is a piece of legislation. It's an enabling legislation that's going into the EU states at the moment, that speaks to disclosures by companies on environmental sustainability, climate risk, the non-financial performance aspects of a company. Interestingly, though, we also saw the voting on the EU's Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive. So that's known as the CSDDD, not the CSRD, the CSDDD, a little bit different. And that one is an enacting law requiring the EU member states to regulate their due diligence around human rights and the environment. That law that was voted, that was not resolved, that was not passed, which is actually a concerning phenomenon because what we're now seeing is a retreat or a stalling of businesses being regulated to disclose the how they're conducting their due diligence to manage environmental and social and human rights risk. Now, there's a political overlay in that, but what that means is we are now back in this place where we're going to have to rely on businesses to take up the mantle and progress that move for greater transparency around how they demonstrate human rights due diligence. And when I say human rights due diligence, I'm essentially meaning how a business understands the impacts it has on people, particularly the negative impacts it has, and what mitigating measures it's taking to control or avoid or prevent those risks to people. Now, risk to people is a bit different to this idea of risk to business. So this is the other thing that's now emerging in the landscape. It's no longer just about considering business risks as risks to the profitability or the viability of a business. There is this other risk now that I think a number of businesses are still trying to get their head around, which is how do I wrap my arms around this concept of risks to people? And what does that mean in terms of how we conduct our business, how we make decisions, how we deliver value, create value for our shareholders and stakeholders? So that's also a complicating factor.
Yes. So, Ro, it's absolutely fascinating. And you're right, because I think, investor confidence is not just now wrapped up in this idea of profitability of organizations, profitability of companies. It is very much more invested in, how are these companies operating? What are the cultures of these companies? Do they have that stability when it comes to looking out for the people who are basically making these businesses more profitable? What are those measures and are they actually being followed through? And I think you're right. That is, it's a measure. There are multiple measures now that investors are looking at when it comes to organizations like you see, like you say, their ESG, and the footprint that they have on the planet, and all of these different measures that are becoming much more important as we progress and as we learn more. Do you see that that is really what's sort of happening now? Do you see that investors are asking those kinds of questions about, human rights, ESG? Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are continually being asked by our investors, super funds, analysts to explain, to go a bit further than what we disclose. It's not just unique to our business, but to a lot of major businesses. They want to dig in and have a look under the bonnet, as it were, around how businesses are looking at this issue, literally. They want to know your processes. They want to know measures and metrics. They want to know what your procedures are. And that's fair enough. They're investing in your business. And of course, they have their fiduciary obligations to their own, shareholders and stakeholders as well. So I think it's not good enough to pay lip service So there's a lot of dialogue about this, but there needs to be, and I think one of the challenges with disclosures and reporting is that you can get very caught up in the disclosure aspect and the writing of it and you know doing fancy reports, but you actually have to do the work. You actually have to have the proof points. And the proof points requires, you know, these are complex areas. The whole language around talking about human rights risk and human rights due diligence is can be quite esoteric. It is complex conceptually for businesses to you know get their heads around. It's challenging for larger businesses who have multiple sort of aspects to their value chain, stakeholders, operations, let alone small businesses that may be at the receiving end of this, you know, through the supply chain, for example. So, how do we create explainers and decoders to make this quite accessible for people? And where are the role models, and examples of proof points that show what good looks like, what good practice looks like? Because it is good business practice at the end of the day. And, you know, I think a lot of that is also that iceberg idea where you have the idea of a policy or a process, but the vast bulk of that iceberg is actually the change management and communications and engagement that has to happen not only internally but also externally, so that people understand what is expected of them, what does it mean for business performance, what are the constraints and the challenges, because I think it's also about authenticity. So if you're a business, you can't declare that you're doing something and then be found to be doing something that is actually the exact opposite. It really rings hollow and it actually adds to that cynicism about sort of corporate behavior. We have a, you know, a litany of those littered in the wake in corporate history. So it is about how authentic, and that does require leadership and it does require that sort of engagement at that board and C-suite level on this issue, like a genuine engagement.
Yes, like you said, I mean, it's such a complex thing to integrate and to genuinely implement. Like, what would you say if you were to sort of, I don't know, pinpoint the first steps that a company could take? What would you say that they would be?
Oh, look, I think the first step is just to have everybody understand that what that remit looks like. When we talk about human rights in a corporate context, when we talk about what's called the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights, which is that principles framework that sort of drives a lot of the sort of the elements of this in this area. What on earth does that mean? What is that? I still think that is, you know, you need to decode that and you need to contextualize that for your business. What does that mean for our business? I think that's the very first step. And that can take a little bit of time because what does this introduce to the business? Does this introduce additional exposure, additional obligation? Does this, is the business organizationally ready for it? Or is there so much change going on in this current climate that maybe the timing's not quite right, or maybe we need to introduce the concept in a staged way. So there are some contextual elements that have got to be thought through to help the business understand not only what the concept is, but how it is relevant for them and how it can. And I think at the end of the day, the really important thing is so what? It's got to drive better business performance at the end of the day. It needs to be mapped to show how it can improve the, you know, the organization's performance and the talent attraction capability as well, amongst other things. So I think that's the first thing. And then once you do that, I think after that, there needs to be this idea of mapping it out and working out, well, what would the framework to respond to our commitment? What would that look like? Do we jump in and start setting out a policy, you know, or a commitment? How do we scope that commitment? What would our commitment look like? And who is impacted by that, you know? And part of that wrangling is also about understanding, you know, what impacts you have as a business, positively and negatively. How do you either, they call it this continuum of involvement, this idea of where you cause, contribute, or be directly linked through the engagement in your supply chain or with investment partners to a human rights risk. Or an adverse human rights impact. And once you've actually reflected on that, looked at your processes and procedures, and thought about what you do as a business, but also think about your strategy. You can't do it in isolation of where you want to go as a business, strategically. Then that starts to help shape out how you want to characterize your commitment to human rights, how you want to declare it. So you can do a very kind of glib, high level, fluffy sort of, and that's very attractive at face value. It looks like it ticks all the right boxes, but I think for it to be meaningful and really embedded properly, I think this, like I really believe the groundwork should happen, the engagement with your business teams, engagement board level, engagement with your leadership, your leadership teams, and then really connecting that back to what you do as a business, why, how this will help your business performance, how it will mitigate risk on a number of levels. And I think there's also needs to be a conversation about what do we mean when we say risk to people for our business, which I think, again, how do we characterize that? What does that mean?
That's the critical bit, isn't it? Is really understanding that human rights risk, what that looks like. Ro, I mean, it's a very complicated topic, and we probably have done it justice in 15 minutes. However, it has given us a very good starting point to think about that more deeply and to think about the implications of what would actually need to happen to implement these strategies. What I was thinking was, is are there any resources that you can think of that would be valuable to a leader listening in now who's keen to learn more about this and how to implement this also into as a sort of starting point? Are there any resources that you could recommend?
There's so many resources. There are a lot of resources. I think if you Google UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights, bang, you'll straight away get the guidance document, which is the seminal piece that sets up the principles, and explains the whole sort of framework and what you should do as a business. I think that's the starting point. You can look at the OECD guidelines for multinational enterprises. Now, that's speaking to large businesses, but there are things in there that small businesses can take away, and it's not about prescribing, it's not about going into detail and prescribing, it's about the principles. It's like a higher level principle about what do we stand for, how do we, what are the things that we should do in our conduct and behavior. So I think they're the two key pieces. The other one would be the ILO website, which is the International Labour Organization website, which has a huge raft of resources and data that you can mine quite happily. And look, the other thing too is also have a look at Google human rights policies, human rights position statements. A lot of companies have them. You'll see them come up, and just have a look at how they're written. And then they can give you, I suppose, that inspiration to think about how you would take the principles that they've expressed and contextualize them to what your business is. So I think they're the sort of the main sort of sources that can get you there. And then, of course, it's also worth looking at other resources by the Australian Human Rights Commission, for example. I don't know if any of your listeners are signatories to the UN Global Compact. The UN Global Compact website actually has good resources as well. That UN Global Compact is the 10 principles, and businesses sign up to those 10 principles. They cover human rights and environment, and they're again. Provide a framework for how you conduct your business responsibly, and sustainably.
Fantastic. That is extremely helpful. What I'll do is I'll make sure that the links for those websites are in the show notes for this episode, and then you can grab your copy and have a look at those principles online in your own time. Thank you, Rose, so much for your time. That's been an absolutely
You're welcome.
fascinating starting point anyway to into the topic of human rights at work.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much to Ro for coming on the show today. And if career is your focus for 2024, that is absolutely where we come in. I work exclusively with corporate women who are looking to get into positions of senior leadership. And we work on the level of executive brand and understanding how to manage up more effectively, how to build your profile, how to own your value, and really bring that authentic leadership style of yours to the fore. And if you're looking for some resources in that space, then you might like to download one of our most popular resources. It's our guide, The 7 Habits of Female Execs Who Get Promoted. All you need to do to get your copy is go to rebeccasfreegift.com and it will come straight to your inbox and you can start looking at those strategies and implementing them too, I hope, straight away. Thanks so much for joining us. I will see you again next week.